the things that were supposed to have been done the day before. Okay, and my final quote will be, I have no yesterdays, time took them all away. Tomorrow may not be, but I still have today. So, with that, we're going to move into scallops. Before we do, is there anything? No, there's nothing else on the agenda. It's just scallops. With that, Tom, is he ready? Okay, what I will say, just for, I wish there was more audience here. Tom's going to run through, we'll have a couple presentations. We're going to go through the alternatives. And at that point in time, I'm going to go to the audience and ask for public comment. So if, before we get into motions, it's going to be very similar to the way we did it at the ground, I think it was Groundfish in Portland for Framework 43. So we'll be able to get all of, if anybody wants anything on the record or comments, you don't have to address them to a specific motion. You'll be able to do it after Tom and Dee get through with their presentations. So with that, Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'll find the appropriate documents behind tab 4. In brief, we're going to be going through the the first thing is a summary presentation of the SSC report, which looked at the MSY issue at the request of the council. After that, we're going to have a brief report by Andy relative to the summary of the first survey advisory committee. And then finally, Deidre will be going through the list of documents in the document, in the binder, and then we'll get into the discussion and description of the range of alternatives. And I think it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, without objection, if there isn't any objection, to have Deborah Hart go through the presentation with Chris. Or I don't know whether Chris is going first. I don't see him here. Where'd he go? Oh, is he? Okay. Deborah, Deidre is bringing to my attention that I got the chronology wrong. It's my limited capacity to understand things early in the morning. I think that Deidre wanted to have Andy give his brief presentation on the Scallop Advisory Committee report first. So if Andy's going to join you at the tape and have him do that first, if that's all right.
Thank you. We had the first meeting of the Scallop Survey Advisory Panel last month. We had 15 of 21 members on the Survey Advisory Panel at the meeting, about 15. We had a productive first meeting. We reviewed the current and proposed survey methods that are currently ongoing. We had some presentations by Victor Nordahl of the Fisheries Science Center in Woods Hole, Kevin Stokesbury Bestmass, Bill DePaul from VIMS, Bill Fole, Fole Associates in New Jersey, Glenn Nutting with Maine DNR, and Richard Taylor. We talked about many of the strengths and weaknesses of the various surveys and their suitability for answering various types of questions. I think it was a good first meeting to get people on the same page in terms of what technology is out there and what might be used. We talked about the ongoing transition in the survey due to the retirement of the Albatross and the oncoming RV Bigelow, which may or may not be used for scallop assessment, depending upon some of the recommendations of this panel and how NIMS looks at these recommendations and whether the Bigelow is the best vessel for doing these types of surveys. There are some short-term needs as a result of this transition, one of which is looking at the survey dredge to see if there are ways of improving its performance and consistency of its performance that can be analyzed during a calibration that might involve both vessels, the Albatross and the Bigelow. There are some long-term goals that we talked about, including timing and integration of industry-based surveys to augment the a long-term region-wide survey to be used in stock assessment and management actions. And so again, we had a pretty good first meeting. We have a second meeting scheduled for June 28th in New Bedford. Part of the meeting is going to be held at Eastern Fisheries with a hands-on evaluation of the scallop dredge. We're going to have some survey dredges there and commercial dredges and talk about ways of improving the survey dredge. Then we're going to reconvene at the Harbor Development Commission office in New Bedford. More of a organizational meeting, electing the chair and the vice chair. Discuss and adopt terms of reference, and also we're going to have a presentation by Paul Rego and DeVore Hart talking about some of the statistical consistencies and how to combine other types of surveys with the random stratified type of surveys that NIMS conducts. So thank you very much for the opportunity to give an update, and I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Questions for Andy? David?
Andy, in your report in the section that references research vessel transition, you note that a significant period of overlap would be required for vessel and gear calibrations. That's the Albatross versus the Bigelow. But then you note that at the present time, the Albatross operations are funded only through 2007. Did the group have any comments regarding that? It sounds that there might be a problem with regard to the transition, since you will not have that significant period of overlap to do the calibrations. Am I making more out of that than I should?
Well, it's a concern, Bo. On the other hand, that's why we have some short-term goals of working on the dredge and see if we can improve the performance of the dredge and test the two dredges out as well as the two vessels during this period of overlap. Whether or not there's an extension on the serviceability of the RV Albatross and additional time for transition, that's up in the air depending upon funding and so on. We hope to get the calibrations done and the changes that we want to have done to the survey dredge in place before the calibrations are done in 2007. I don't know whether DeVore has anything to add to that or not.
I just want to say that scallop dredges don't have the trawl as much. This is much bigger concern for the trawl survey, where 1 year is not going to be enough, and we're going to have real problems if that. Scallop dredges tends not to be much of a vessel effect, and scallop dredges tend to have less of a, they're more reliable gear than trawl gear. So can't be absolutely sure. It'd be nice to have a longer overlap period, but there's at least some chance that we can get a good calibration in 2007.
Other questions for Andy? Okay, thank you, Andy. DeVore, are you going first, or is Chris going to go first?
I guess I'm going first. Okay. And then I'm already set up here. Okay, I'm going to give it maybe a 10-minute presentation about what was kind of the ideas around what is MSY for scallops. And I'll start with a slight overview of what MSY is, because there's some confusion of that, and then goes to the specifics of the how it could be calculated for scallops.
DeVore, just 1 second, if I could. Just so the council knows, there are two documents that were passed out. They are number 8 revised and number 15 revised. They are on white paper, and they were passed out in the last day or so. And they are the two documents that are going to be referenced for this discussion. Thank you.
Okay. MSY started as a idealized concept and an equilibrium model. And it was defined as the maximal yield that can be attained at equilibrium. If you look at this diagram, which I'm sure many of you have seen, if you fish too hard, then you cut down the biomass and you don't get many fish or scallops. And if you don't fish hard enough, there's a large biomass, but you only take a small fraction of them. So the happy medium is you get the most yield. It's yield on the y-axis, fishing mortality on the x-axis. Make it clear that this exercise wasn't so much to determine FMSY, that is the control point, but the point on the y-axis, MSY, the actual yield. One way of thinking about this is you can do a simple analogy. Suppose you had $10,000 in a bank earning 5% interest, and you want to know how much you can withdraw out of this sustainably. Well, it's pretty obvious that the MSY is $500, as you can take $500 out each year and do that forever. If you take anything more than $500, you're going to eat into your principal, and eventually you're not going to be able to take anything more out. If you take anything less, that's sustainable, but it's not maximal. And so these type of problems are actually real easy when you have perfect information, you have no variability and uncertainty, it's obvious what to do. Yeah. And unfortunately, the world is not, ideals and reality are not always the same. And typically, fisheries are not in equilibrium. We don't have perfect information. So this was what causes this uncertainty. The first thing is, since we're not in equilibrium, that definition before doesn't really make sense. So you might want to more properly define it as the maximum average yield that can be attained over the long term. You know, so we're even giving up that the yield is the same each year. Some years where you have good productivity, you're going to have higher yields, and some years you're going to have lower yields. But you want the greatest yields over the long time. And this already immediately gets a problem, because productivity is, we have to estimate the long-term productivity of the resource. And generally, we only know it to any reasonable degree of accuracy over a fairly short time period. In terms of the bank analogy, suppose instead of that simple case you had before, you have a bank that gives variable interest rates, which is absolutely what happens in a fishery. Productivity goes up and down. The bank may give 50% 1 year and 1% next year, and it won't even tell you what the interest rate are. You have to figure that out. You can say, well, I look at the bank balance, my bank balance this year and the bank balance next year. Problem with that is you only know that the bank doesn't tell you exactly what your balance is. And that is really what it is. I mean, that's our bank balance could be thought of as the biomass, and it's only known approximately. And if you think about this situation, someone asks you what's your long-term yield you can get out of this, it's not so obvious. You'd have to kind of try to estimate what the long-term mean interest rate is. And the only way you really can try doing that is to look at previous productivity, previous interest rates, and hope that's representative of the future. So that's what we're going to do. All right, a basic way we decompose this is yield per recruit times recruitment. So recruitment is, and for scallops defined as two-year-old scallops. So these are scallops before they've entered the fishery. And so they're what comes, we see them on the survey for the first time, is 2 years old. And the second part is yield per recruit, which is what we get out of each one of those recruits. And there's a real distinction between both of these components. The scallop recruitment is highly variable, highly, highly variable, like a lot of resources, but maybe even more so. And it's not clear at all whether management can affect recruitment, whether any of the measures that can be taken could in any way affect what that recruitment is. It may or may not be that management can affect it. Yield per recruit, on the other hand, is much better understood, and it strongly depends on management. And scallops give a very good example of that. In 2005, the bulk of the landings were 10-20 count scallops, which weigh 25 to 30 grams, and it's over twice as what. Heavy is what occurred 15-20 years ago when they were lucky to make the meat count of 35 to 40 count, or 11 to 13 grams. And so for each recruit, much more is gotten out of it today than there was 15 years ago. And so this part of it, yield may have been increased. Yield per recruit roughly has increased by a factor of 2, which is one reason. It's not the only reason, but it's one reason why the yields are up. So I'll do the yield per recruit analysis first because it's much more straightforward and reliable. Here's the basic results. There are still some uncertainties. Yield per recruit depends on growth. It depends on assumptions in natural mortality and so on and so on. And though these things are reasonably well known for scallops, there are still some uncertainty to them. So there's a 20-30% uncertainty of what the yield per recruit is. Should mention the FMAX, which is the fishing mortality that gets you your YMAX, is very close to what our present target of 0.24 is. And if you compare this to what happened 15 years ago, it's about twice the yield per recruit. All right, that's the easy part. Now, to estimate recruitment, the only thing we can do is look at the historical time series and hope that gives us a guide of what long-term recruitment is. This is recruitment time series for Georges Bank, and it looks pretty random. It goes up. There's periods of strong recruitment, periods of weak recruitment. It doesn't seem the line there represents egg production, and there doesn't seem to be any relationship between them. The dashed line indicates when the closures occur, and there might have been some hope that the closures would have increased recruitment. We were thinking of that. Maybe that might be going on 4 or 5 years ago. Now, after 4 years of bad recruitment, it doesn't look like it's done much at all. Another thing you can look at, that we have a longer time series, is the landings data, which we can go back to the 1950s at least on Georges. And it really gives the same sort of picture that the recruitment does. There's periods of high landings, periods of low landings, but generally there doesn't seem to be any sort of change or trend going on. This seems to be a kind of persistent pattern. Should note to you that there was about a 10-year period about 1965 to 1975 that landings were down and there was poor recruitment for about 10 years. And so even when there's a long-term yield is something. When you have a period of poor recruitment like that, during that period, you're going to have lower yields. And, of course, when the recruitment's good, you're going to have higher yields. Mid-Atlantic is a more difficult case because there is a trend. If you look prior to about the mid-1980s, recruitment was poor, very poor. And then it started trending up. And then the last 8 years, we have had consistently strong recruitment and 1 year of extremely good recruitment. So this is much harder if you want to project in the future what this is going to mean. Is this pattern going to repeat itself in the next 25 years? Or is perhaps we're in a different regime and we're going to have an extended period of high recruitment? Or perhaps at some point this recent period is an anomaly and we're going to go back to very poor recruitment. Recruitment in the last 8 years has been over 10 times what it was in the first 6 years. The other question, you notice that there is some indication that higher egg production, higher biomass is getting higher recruitment, but that is uncertain whether that's a cause or an effect or both. The landings data basically shows the same type of pattern. If you look prior to about the mid-1980s, landings were low. They averaged only a couple thousand, 2,000-3,000 metric tons a year. And the highest you ever saw was about 5,000 metric tons. People who wrote about mid-Atlantic scallop fishery would say that the mid-Atlantic is not as productive as Georgia's. And something happened about the mid-1980s. And you see the landings go up. During the mid-80s through about 95, the scallops were overfished, and you weren't getting as much yield per recruit out of them as you could. And in the most recent years, you see you're just in a different world. Part of that is due to the better recruitment, and part of that is due to improved management, the rotational closures and the effort reduction measures and the 4-inch rings or 3.5-inch rings before them that have brought better yield per recruit. So we're in a totally different world than we were before. So you can call this the $200 million question. Will recruitment in the Mid-Atlantic continue to be strong, or will it revert to the low level seen prior to the mid-1980s, or something in between? In the short to medium term, yields will remain high because we already still have that big year class is just beginning to get fished in the mid-Atlantic, and we have lots of scallops on the ground there. So we know, or reasonably sure, that yields remain high in the short to medium term. But the long-term prognosis depends on what's going to happen to recruitment, and we really don't know. I just want to explore briefly whether management measures such as rotational closures could be in part responsible for the increased recruitment. To emphasize, this is not something we can make conclusions on now, but there's at least some evidence of it. If you look at the map on the left, that is the recruitment in the 2002 survey, in the NIMS 2002 survey. The right hand shows ocean currents. And the story is, in the mid-Atlantic, the ocean currents generally go southward or west, a little bit to the west, basically along the coast. And on the other one, you can see in the middle, off of New Jersey, is that rotational closure, the Hudson Canyon closure, that was closed in 1998. And in 2000, the biomass there had built up and was about five times bigger than it had ever been in that area below. And coincidence or not, the recruitment you see there is much stronger downstream, that is south of that closure, than it is upstream of that closure. And 1 year might be a coincidence, but we've seen this now 3 years in a row. Recruitment is better downstream than it is upstream. The next year was actually even more extraordinary in 2001. This is a 2003 survey, which is the 2001 year class. We see them as three-year-olds. That's on the right. And we had extraordinary recruitment in what's now the Elephant Trunk closed area, directly downstream of this Hudson Canyon area. On the left shows we almost never see this. We see in the 2002 survey, right just south of that Elephant Trunk closed area, of the Hudson Canyon closed area in what's now Elephant Trunk, we saw buckets of these little tiny scallops, half-inch, one-year-old scallops. Their catchability in the dredge is very small because they're smaller than the liner. There's a couple pictures. I don't know how well they come out. But on the top picture was 2002, and there's a big scallop for scale there. That's about a seven-year-old scallop. And next to it are these handfuls of these little baby one-year-old scallops. The next year, when that year class was fully recruited to the survey dredge, we had these unprecedented piles like that. And that one toe on the lower picture there had more recruit scallops than the first 6 years of the survey in the Mid-Atlantic put together. Which comprised over maybe around 1,000 toes. So it's really remarkable. So I don't want to say that that's a certain thing, but there's at least some possibility that these rotational closures might be enhancing recruitment. All right, getting to the bottom line. MSY estimates, as you said, there's going to be some uncertainty because there's uncertainty with recruitment, less uncertainty of yield per recruit, but it's there. For Georges Bank, the estimate is between 9,000 and 15,000 metric tons per year, and I'm more comfortable with that one than in the Mid-Atlantic. The Mid-Atlantic is 11,000 to 20,000 metric tons a year, so that gives a range somewhere between 20 and 35,000 metric tons. I should emphasize that these ranges do not fully reflect the true uncertainty, especially in the Mid-Atlantic, because, we don't know what's going to happen in the Mid-Atlantic. It could be for the next 20 years we're going to have recruitment like we've had the last eight, in which case this estimate in the Mid-Atlantic could be underestimated by 50%. It could be 30,000 metric tons. On the other hand, if recruitment goes back to where it was prior to the mid-1980s, 11,000 is an overestimate, and we're lucky to get 5,000 metric tons. To emphasize, these are averages, and there have been long periods of poor recruitment in both areas. And it's a mistake to think that you can always get these yields out in every year, because there might be some years, and there are likely some years, that you're going to get less yields, and some years, like we're going to get in the next few years as those big year classes get into the fishery, where we're going to get higher yields. These MSY is kind of, you have EPA mileage estimates, and you have a warning that your yield may vary and is likely to be less. And because, again, you're still assuming that everything is being fished in a almost optimal way for scallops. And there's a number of effects that likely are going to change this MSY estimate. Like there are EFH closures in the in Georges Bank and Nantucket Shoals area, and they have substantial amount of scallop productivity in those areas, and they're likely to reduce yields by 8 to 10% if those areas remain closed. Another effect is that some areas are fished harder than other areas, and that's just the way things are. Most of the don't micromanage effort in open areas, and so more productive areas tend to get fished harder than less productive areas. And that's not taken account for in this MSY estimate. And generally, that will reduce yield. I'm estimated here roughly around 5%. Thirdly, the spatial average over fishing definition in effect allows some overfishing of open areas. And that's likely to reduce yields in the long term by maybe 5%. On the positive side, there's this adaptive rotation policy. Areas get closed for 3 years or so and then reopened. And that's likely to increase yields perhaps by about 5%. Okay.
That was very informative, and I think for the first time when you put it in terms of gas mileages and money, people probably understood most of it. So, although I think most people have credit cards. Dave?
Yeah, Deborah, you showed one figure for Georges Bank, recruitment on Georges Bank. You made the point that recruitment is highly variable, and we've had 4 years of bad recruitment, and that contrasts with the Mid-Atlantic. The fishing industry, Sea Scallop researchers such as those from SMAST, Kevin Stokesbury and his colleagues, have made a point more than once that predation is having a major effect on the abundance of sea scallops, especially in the closed areas. Do you believe that there's a potential for the poor recruitment on Georges Bank in recent years to have been the result of an upswing in the number of predators such as starfish? And do you have any information that would suggest that there are different numbers and types of predators, Mid-Atlantic versus Georges Bank, so a predation problem may not exist in the Mid-Atlantic?
To the contrary, I think there's more predation in the Mid-Atlantic. There's a sea star there, Astropectin americanus, that's a spat predator. It's specific on spat. And it's in high numbers in the Mid-Atlantic. And it's rare on Georges because Georges in generally is too cold for it. You have to separate the question of predation on adults from predation on juveniles. The kind of large Asteria sea stars that'll eat the big scallops generally won't. A little scallop is not going to be of interest to it. It doesn't get enough energy out of it. It might eat it, but it's much more likely to go after a big adult. There might be a possibility for the adults that natural mortality is increased. You cannot rule that out at this point. There's no evidence that I see that this is anything other than a natural fluctuation up and down for Georges for the recruitment part of it. As I said, there was a 10-year period of poor recruitment in the 1960s that followed a period of very strong recruitment. And that's, it may be scary, but that's more or less the sort of pattern that we saw in the, we saw a period of strong recruitment, and now we've seen some poor recruitment. And it looks nothing other than a random thing to me. I mean, we may get better information as years go on, but I don't see anything right now.
Okay, thank you. And one other question would be, you showed the generalized water circulation patterns, and you mentioned some of the seeding effects with the production from the northern areas being moved down to the south, and hence you get recruitment in the southerly direction as opposed to a northerly direction. Do you have any evidence that would suggest that perhaps current conditions on Georges Bank, meaning water conditions, circulation patterns on Georges Bank in the last 4 years, 5 years, have been different from the previous 5 years, so that whatever recruitment was produced on Georges Bank previously was kept on Georges Bank because of the circulation, but now perhaps all of that or much of that recruitment is being swept off Georges Bank and carried down to the Mid-Atlantic area?
It's possible, but we don't have enough. I mean, there's enough of retention there that there's going to be enough larvae on Georges. I think it's I try to do a calculation of how many eggs are being produced on Georges Bank, and it comes out to something like 100 quintillion eggs. So, I mean, you know, I mean, that kind of boggles the mind. And so even if 50% of it was left the bank, there's still enough there, I think, to be saturated. The question of things like, you know, there is a lot of questions there, and that's something that certainly ask for research. It's very difficult to pick these type of things out because everything is so noisy. But exactly what the ocean conditions are that do good years and bad years. I mean, there have been speculation that the tight gyres, when there's more retention, it's a good year, and when it's not, it's a bad year. There's also been people suggesting that it's related to phytoplankton, whether you have good phytoplankton blooms or not. You can speculate. It's not sure at all. As far as Georgia's seeding the Mid-Atlantic, you know, that's an attractive idea, but the first thing you see when you look at that is that most of the larvae that are coming from Georgia's Bank to settle in the off of Long Island. And we have not seen strong recruitment off Long Island. This pattern where recruitment gets better as you go farther south is not consistent with seeding from Georgia's Bank. I mean, I'm not absolutely sure. That doesn't say that some of that isn't happening, but to me, at least, the evidence isn't consistent with that at this point.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you. Oh, sorry. Rodney?
When you were giving your talk, now maybe I misunderstood you. Was it that you couldn't estimate the effects of the closed area, or did you say that the closed area wasn't helping the recruitment?
In Georgia's Bank, you distinguish between the two. In Georgia's Bank, we can estimate recruitment. Here it is. And if you look at recruitment since the closure and before the closure, mean recruitment since the closure is slightly higher than before the closure. And you can ask whether that can be due to chance. And the answer is very clearly that it can be. We've had those big year classes. We had that one big year class. There's been really three. You only see one in this time series because that's when we had the survey. But there was another one like that in the late 1970s, another one like that in the late 1950s. It doesn't appear that there is much effect. In the last 4 years, we've had poor recruitment. When the closures first went into effect, we had some good recruitment. It doesn't seem that there's any relationship at all between recruitment and egg production. Potentially, it's because we have a lot better retention in Georgia's than you do in the Mid-Atlantic, where you have a very different ocean dynamics there. Whereas so that the closures in the Mid-Atlantic may be increasing recruitment, may or may not be. In Georgia's, there's no evidence of it at all.
Dave?
Yeah, I wonder if, as occurs with some fish and certainly with some shellfish, if there's an inverse relationship, that at high spawning biomass you actually get poorer recruitment because of space limitations on the bottom and other things.
Yeah, there's no real evidence of that. This is in SSC I presented some more technical things to look at that, and there really isn't evidence at this point that it's anything. There's been one thing. There was an aquaculture experiment where they seeded scallops at different densities. And what ended up happening at the end, and there were much higher densities than we normally see in nature. And what happened at the end is all the different seeding densities ended up the same. So that's suggesting basically that we have what you'd say is an asymptotic stock recruitment relationship, where at high biomasses like we have now, there's going to be randomness to it. But other than that, it's going to be go to some type of flat asymptote. And I think A Ricker curve makes sense for salmon or something like that who are cannibalistic and they're in a very limited space. For these animals, I don't think so.
Okay, thank you.
Chris,
you're up next. I'd also like to thank you for the, that was a very good presentation and your work that you've done on that, and I know it wasn't easy. Dave?
Yeah, before Chris gives his presentation, do we intend to discuss the MSYs in the context of the S&S committee deliberations?
That's not Chris.
Oh, okay.
Chris.
Okay, what I'm going to do here is basically give the SSC report for the SSC. They felt it was fairly straightforward, and no one was available to come to give it. The report, I'm going to read through the statements, and Devorah and I can try to answer any questions. First, the SSC concluded that the analysis done by the center and the PDT is a reasonable approach to estimating MSY from a yield per recruit standpoint. There were a number of different approaches used, but they felt that one was the strongest. A variety of approaches were used that was sufficiently covered the range of possible approaches. Two, there are unequal consequences from choosing a higher or lower points from the MSY range. If MSY is underestimated, the fishery may be unnecessarily restricted, resulting in the loss of short-term benefits. If MSY is overestimated, however, overfishing may be allowed, which is difficult to correct and may have long-term consequences. So what they're saying is if you use a higher end of the range, you may be in some more danger from a practical management standpoint simply because it's harder to deal with issues like capacity and reducing fishing than generally increasing fishing. Third, MSY is a long-term average yield under optimal and stable conditions. For example, current selectivity, exploitation rates, and environmental conditions, and not necessarily the short-term yield. MSY should guide long-term management strategy. I think Devorah did a good job of explaining the background for that statement. But to be clear, or maybe a little clearer, is one reason the MSY estimates are higher now than were years ago is the selectivity pattern. You're catching larger scallops. If management practices, management measures changed and the selectivity pattern changed to focus on longer scallops, the MSY estimates would have to be reduced. Fourth, the council should prepare a plan for greatly reduced annual yields in the future based on the historical record. This is probably the most stark recommendation and one that you might not expect. But the conditions may change, and perhaps we can get back to that a little later. Fifth, in setting OY below MSY, the council should recognize there is a disproportionately greater gain in reductions to bycatch species relative to reductions in target species. I'll let Devorah explain that because I believe you presented some of the information.
Oh. All it really is if you're at the top of the yield curve, you reduce fishing mortality a little bit, it doesn't change yield very much. So if you reduce fishing mortality from 20%, you will reduce long-term yield by only a couple percent because the yield curve is flat on the top. On the other hand, you reduce fishing mortality by 20%, you reduce bycatch by 20%. So there's a disproportionate benefit to bycatch species relative to the loss in yield, understanding that there's a trade-off between those two.
Six, the report reviewed by the SSC has specified MSY values for Georgia's Bank that range from 9 to 15,000 tons, which is approximately 22 to 33 million pounds, and for the Mid-Atlantic that range from 20,000 metric tons, or 24 to 44 million pounds. The Council should realize, as mentioned earlier, that these are average yields under idealized management conditions and may not reflect short-term or even long-term yields under other management practices. This range does not truly cover all the uncertainties in the estimation of MSY and does not completely account for the variability in gear selectivity, recruitment, dredge efficiency, natural mortality, and the time period analyzed. The actual range was estimated to be as high as 24,000 metric tons. This was for Georgia's Bank. But that range was decided to be too high because it is not consistent with historical landings and was influenced by a few samples from a single year class in 1998. So this is more of a footnote. That estimate was basically not recommended by the SSC, so that's not included in the final result. The above statements address MSY, but management decisions will be implemented in terms of OY. And in that process, certain adjustments need to be made, including reductions due to spatial management constraints, such as EFH closed areas. Finally, in the planning of expected yields, historic average yields might have been considered in contrast to yields under MSY levels, because the high range of MSY estimates provided are obviously higher than the highest yields achieved under the current management practices. The SSC notes that the lower end of the MSY estimates provided above are higher than reported landings for most years since 1957. Actual catches may have been higher for a number of reasons. That deals with the reporting system and discards. Several management measures implemented since the mid-1990s have improved yield per recruit, and stronger recruitment in recent years, particularly in the mid-Atlantic, would have been expected to increase MSY. The SSC is confident that the lower end of the MSY range may be achievable, but the upper end is unlikely to be. Now, these are just a couple of tables to illustrate the reductions in MSY to OY simply from the EFH closures, which Devorah touched on in her presentation. This is the range of MSY estimates in terms of pounds accepted by the SSC. I'm sorry if there's any confusion switching between pounds and tons. And one thing that the SSC cautioned is MSY estimates are resource area specific, meaning that if there's the low estimate of 44 million pounds should not, the Council should be careful that not to think that that can come from a specific area. The fishing mortality in the areas have to be properly balanced to achieve your maximum sustainable yield. In terms of the EFH closures, Devorah showed that the average reductions in MSY for the total resource for the EFH closures were about 10%. More specifically, they're 17% for Georgia's Bank where those closures occur. So these estimates, these are what the Council might envision working with in terms of the under the current management practices of EFH closures. So basically, total MSY estimates are reduced to 39 to 77 million pounds. Finally, there's a couple of conclusions that might be emphasized. The fact that current landings exceed MSY means that they're not sustainable. At some point, the current landings that we anticipate or projected for Framework 9 through Framework 18 will be reduced in future years. And fluctuations in recruitment could cause harvest levels to fall well below the higher MSY estimates for a single year. And that concludes the report. I should be make it clear that the slides in blue, these were the SSC statements, and the last three slides and conclusions were just explanations provided by the staff.
Thank you, Chris.
Dave?
Yeah, thanks to the SSC for spending so much time on this MSY concept. Appreciate their suggestions, their review. I'm not going to ask you any specific questions, Chris, because that would be a bit unfair. You're here representing the SSC. There are no members here today to address specific questions. I do note, however, that in the report, the memo from Paul Howard to council members, it said that it's very important for the council to read and understand the SSC report thoroughly. I don't think we have that report, do we? Is there something more detailed than the one pager that we have? If it exists, I'd like to see it, since obviously it must be very important for us to read, because the executive director is telling us that it's very important to read.
Yes. David, just to answer your question, no, that's the report. I think that the statements that they made do merit your attention and careful consideration. I don't think they had much more to say than what they said in their consensus.
Okay, thank you. Despite the time put into this by the SSC, I must admit that I feel like I've entered a fog bank, and the fog bank is very thick, and I don't think it's going to lift for quite a long time. Perhaps it will lift after I give this some more study and some more thought. I worked on this last night and this morning, and I must admit it's quite confusing. For example, in the report provided to us, the meeting summary, there's a reference to the fact that in number 3, MSY should guide long-term management strategy. And then when I look at number 6, I see that the council should realize that these are average yields under idealized management conditions and may not reflect short-term or even long-term yields under other management practices. So it seems that in number 6 they're saying we might not be able to really consider these numbers to judge what might be long-term yields, yet on number three it says we should be guided by these values for long-term management strategies. Number 6, I don't understand what number 6 is saying, except that there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty that has been well described by DeVore. We all know there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty, but I read that and it makes me very uncomfortable regarding the numbers that have been provided relative to the range for MSY in these different areas. And again, this is not criticism. I'm just saying that I have to give this a lot more study, because I don't have confidence yet that these values for MSY are really values that we should adopt. One reason why I feel that, and maybe this is a misunderstanding on my part, I look at number 8 and I see that the SSC is indicating that it's confident the lower end of the MSY range may be achievable, but the upper end is unlikely to be. But I noted in this document or another one that references the MSY value and yields that we're expecting in fishing year 2006 to get 71 million pounds, and then the next year maybe 70 million pounds. So it seems that we have certainly achieved or will achieve the yield on the lower range already, and we probably will achieve the range, maybe exceed the range for the upper end. Again, maybe I'm misunderstanding something and I have to reflect on this some more. Bottom line, I'm still quite confused regarding these MSY values and to what extent we should adopt them. My question, therefore, is after all of that, after all those comments, what what will be the process for this council relative to the MSY values? Do we have to have thoughtful deliberation about those MSY values and then adopt them through specific council action, or do the MSY values just automatically change because now we have some new information that provides us with MSY values, although admittedly they're arranged, they're not specific numbers. So what's the process that we follow now regarding the MSY values?
Chris?
First, the MSY values basically inform management. There's no management measures that are based on the MSY estimates. We manage the fishery by an F rate target. With regard to your earlier comments, Dave, I think we can spend plenty of time out in the hall straightening you out. And Devorah,
you're going to need a baseball bat for that, Chris.
And I think Devorah can address some of those. One of the things just to keep in mind is that how you manage this fishery has a tremendous impact on MSY. That's one source of uncertainty, and the other is recruitment. But
yeah, following up on Chris's second point, what the SSC was saying is that there's currently much different selectivity than there was 15 years ago. 15 years ago, there was concentration on small scallops. That was all there was. And they were looking for the small scallop piles, and they were fishing them out when they're small. Today, no one wants to look at small scallops. They're tough to shuck and all this other type of stuff, and there's 4-inch rings. So the selectivity has changed hugely. As I said, the typical scallop being caught now is 10-20 count. It's a lot different than a 40-count scallop. And I think all the SSC was saying is as long as this selectivity, the calculations were based on the current selectivities. And as long as those selectivities continue, then these ranges are fairly reasonable. That goes into the yield per recruit calculations. And you're going to lose 10-20% of yield right off the bat if you just change the selectivity. Fishing mortality also, that those things are dependent on management. And the presumption that management is going to stay more like it is than it was 15 years ago. The other question about the short-term yields is no question that in the Mid-Atlantic, all the scallops in the Mid-Atlantic were that we see now, almost all, were from the last 8 years, where we've had extraordinarily good recruitment. The average over the last 8 years is twice the time series average. So if it would happen that continues, then the estimate in the Mid-Atlantic is low, and it would be higher. But, it's unreasonable to say that's going to be your best estimate, but there's some possibility of it. So in the next few years, especially because that one huge year class, which is concentrated in the elephant trunk, I mean, the densities that we see in the elephant trunk are way above even in the groundfish closed areas. And as long as that continues, we're going to have very high yields. And that's why we have very high yields the next couple of years. And remember, MSY is a long-term average. So you're going to have potentially lower yields some years and higher yields some other years. If you have the fact that you have short-term yields that might even be at or above that high estimate doesn't mean that the long-term one is, because you have these fluctuations in productivity.
And so looking at the memo from Paul Howard to the council members, where we see the MSY estimates adjusted for reductions due to EFH closures, we see a combined MSY for Georges Bank in the Mid-Atlantic ranging from 40 to 70 million pounds, lower to high. And we see that currently it's expected that for fishing year 2006 and 2007 we'll be taking around 71 million, maybe 79 million pounds. That's the way I read that. So currently it's projected that we will be at the MSY value for these two areas combined. However, that's not likely to be a sustainable amount for the reasons that have been just identified by DeVore. And indeed, I understand that, and I believe that. It just seems a bit misleading to say that, I shouldn't say misleading. You're just bracketing it low and high, but it seems to me that you're telling us that the SSC recommendation for the high value of MSY should be avoided, and we should be looking more at the lower end of the MSY estimates as something to guide our management decisions. Am I correct with that understanding?
Now you're putting me in a position where I'm not sure they went quite that far, but there are a lot of caveats about using the high end of the range in there. So I think that they're a little uncomfortable with the high end of the range for MSY. And they do say that the risks are asymmetric, meaning that if you build a fishery that's geared on 70 million pounds and that's not sustainable, you're probably going to have a lot more problems than if you if the capacity in the fishery is based on let's say more of a mean estimate in the range. But they have no way of characterizing the uncertainty of the estimates themselves, low versus high.
Jim?
Thank you. I'm a little confused about the current status of scallops as to whether there's overfishing or not. Memo from Paul Howard that we have, it says that the current landings exceed FMSY. But there's another letter in here that's a response to Dave Wallace's letter, which says that subsequent to the publication of the NOI, it was determined that overfishing was not occurring. And
let me answer that quickly, Jim. That should read the current landings exceed MSY, not FMSY. So that's an error in the memo.
Yeah, and that's different because we had high productivity now, and you would expect if you're fishing at FMSY that during years of good recruitment or after years of good recruitment, you're going to get landings above FMSY, and then years that there have been poor recruitment, you're going to get landings that are below. So short term, it's sustainable to have landings in the 70 million pound. Sustainable may be a bad word, but it doesn't imply overfishing by and of itself.
Okay, go to the audience, Trevor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Trevor Kensington, Fisheries Survival Fund. I don't want to flog this to death. I think DeVore and Chris have explained it pretty well. I did want to take issue with staff's interpretation of the SSCs, if you can get to your very last slide of all. I was going to talk on the first bullet, but I think DeVore has just dealt with that. Current landings could not be continued at these levels indefinitely. The resource couldn't stand it. That doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do short term. DeVore has just said that. The second one, fluctuations in recruitment could cause harvest levels to fall below. It's not the higher MSY estimates. Fluctuations in recruitment could cause harvest levels in particular years to fall below MSY. Now, what the SSC said, and it doesn't entirely come through in the written document, they're saying the true value of the long-term average is probably above that sort of 40 to 45 million pounds. How much above? They can't tell you. I mean, the 77 million pounds is there, but they're unsure that it could be that high. It is probably, but not certainly, above 40 to 45 million. The true long-term average may turn out to be a bit below, but we think probably it's above 40 to 45 million. The single-year value may be lower. And the other thing that's wrong with that interpretation is it's not single-year. I'm sorry, I just used that expression. DeVore told you earlier that Georges has a history of 10 years of mediocre to poor recruitment. And then periodically you get extremely good recruitment. This is what we find in a whole lot of fishery resources. You don't get an average, some better, some worse. You get runs of mediocre years, short bursts of extremely good recruitment go back to mediocre again. This is important in the present context because it means that at the end of a period of poor recruitment, we're going to have a number of years when the optimal target catch is quite well below the true MSY. We don't know what the true MSY is, probably above 40 million, probably above 45 million, could be lower. But there's going to be some times when you have 3, 4, 5 years when the target catch is a good deal lower still. Now, nobody has tried, and I don't think it could be done, to make a quantitative estimate of what's the worst case. Assuming we manage perfectly, and of course if we don't do that, then catches can drop down to zero, target catches can drop to zero. But assuming we manage perfectly, what's the worst case? What might we find for, say, 3 years? I don't know what the number might be, but I'll take a stab because I'm not responsible the way DeVore is. Let's say we might face a situation where for a number of years, target catches are £30 million a year, under perfect management, but allowing for fluctuations in recruitment. So as you're designing long-term things like the capacity of a fleet, you want to be thinking of maybe we don't want everybody to go broke if they have to live on £30 million a year for a few years. You know, they're not expected to make profits. I mean, you don't do well in the low end of the natural cycle, but you also wouldn't want the entire industry to go to the wall. And that sort of number, that what you're going to hit in the bad year that people have to live through, and it's not going to be a single year, it's going to be a run of a few years, is going to be a number substantially below MSY, and MSY itself could be below 40, but it's probably a bit above. And I think I'm dealing fairly with what the SSC had to say. I was at the meeting, and there was some obviously to-ing and fro-ing that doesn't make it into the written report. So I think that's a fair reflection. Thank you.
Turned it off. Okay. Dick Allen, it seems to me there's probably some economic expertise on the SSC, but I didn't see that reflected in the report. And traditionally, economists would not equate the physical yield, MSY, to maximum benefits, which seemed to be the case in the report. And I think in terms of the long-term management strategy and kind of getting towards the things that Trevor mentioned, that if you're looking at how do you design a management strategy that is going to accommodate the fleet over time with fluctuating catches, that you really have to start to bring in an economic perspective and economic expertise and look at what the economists call a production function rather than just the physical yield that you might get from the resource. And the way it was presented, even though DeVore mentioned that it was highly variable, if you just look at that yield curve, and it looks like one curve, and in fact that curve in practical terms may be going up and down, and then you've got a cost curve that intersects with that that determines what the profitability of the fishery is going to be. And I would just suggest that if you really want to make better use of this information, you really need to get an economic perspective added to what you had this morning. Thanks.
Thank you. I think Paul wants to respond.
Respond. That's a good point, Dick. We separated our SSC into two groups, an SSAC with economists and sociologists, and we'll have them look at it. But I think I'm right in saying that the MSY is purely a biological to meet our biological requirements. OY is where the council can set OY below that biological reference to maximize the economic and social benefits. So we have time to have the SSAC look at OY issues.
Ron?
Okay. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Just one question and then one comment. As far as I understand, these MSY estimates were not a PDT document. Is that correct? When I was at the SSC, the PDT did not vet. There is no PDT document that's the MSY.
That's correct.
Okay, so in point one, it says the analysis done by the center and the PDT. As far as I know, I was told by several members of PDT, they did not analyze this. And I think that's a very important point.
Ron, they were. It was prepared by the Science Center in DeVore in consultation with the PDT. The PDT did review and comment on the work.
Is it, well, that's why I'd like to see. I'd like to see a comment document from the. I'd like to see a PDT document signed off by the PDT, because I know several of the key scientists on there have great concerns about this, and. It would be nice if we're going to formally use this information to make sure that everything is done in a scientific step-by-step process. But that's, I think that's very important. The second point that I think that's the real takeaway from this, and if we go back to Amendment 6 with the Seastead Project, is the problem with this fishery, a shellfish fishery, is that it's highly cyclic. And it's very difficult to set up a management plan to mirror the cycles of a fishery like this. In groundfish, for example, if you look at haddock over the 1930 to 1965 period, fishery was pretty stable at landings, 95 million pounds a year. The Canadian cod fishery for 100 years, the coastal trap fishery, very stable landings year in, year out. It allows for a stability in the fishery, in the economics. Shellfish don't work that way. And to design the recommendation you get here is to design the fishery at the lower level. What we tried to do in the Seastead approach is say, hey, manage and design the fishery for the higher level, which means you need to introduce new management concepts. The Japanese fishery, very similar type of scallop, you know, up to the 1930s, they had fluctuations between 5 and 30,000 metric tons. At that point, they just said, we're going to work to stabilize and enhance this fishery. And they have a very stable fishery now, 300,000 metric tons. We have a bigger area and a more productive ocean environment. We could do a lot more here. And that was the whole purpose of the Seastead Project. I think this council should, unlike the other fisheries, really think out some new innovative approaches, which involve area-by-area management, predator controls, seeding, all the concepts being used in other countries around the world to stabilize this fishery, as opposed to designing a management system that goes up and down with the fluctuations of the natural cycle. And one of the things that bothers me is we don't get that scientific advice from our standard panels made up of assessment biologists. That's my two cents. Thank you.
Jim?
Showing you. There we go. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I have a couple of questions and a couple of comments as well. Thank you for recognizing me, Mr. Chairman. Devorah, can you tell me that the data you presented today, does this include the SMS data that's been available for the last year or two?
No, it's we need long-term data for this, and SMAS doesn't have long-term data. Additionally, I haven't seen SMAS data, so it's available to them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to get into it. He said, she said, but my understanding is that the data has been made available for the last several years. If they can't incorporate it into the document or into the works, I think it should be made available alongside of it. So it can be compared. My understanding is it has been peer-reviewed, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I was told that the data has been presented to the Science Center and the people working with it. So there's some extreme concerns why it's not recognized, and like I say, if not incorporated, at least presented.
Two things, Jim, with that. First, when we have looked at the SMAS data, it's very consistent with the NIMS survey data. They're both showing very similar things. Not exactly, but very similar sort of things. And the issues here was, again, this was an estimate of long-term, and we don't have a long-term time series with SMAS, so it doesn't help us. It only tells us about the last few years. Particularly, we need recruitment data, and the video survey is not that good at catching recruitment. And the second thing is that for me, I was given the 2003 survey data. I don't have 2004, 2005. And so I have to work with what I have. They have presented small documents, but they weren't sufficiently detailed to do anything with.
Well, to that point, then, it all the more reason, I think, that information should be made available if it so closely parallels the information that you're working with. I find that a little concerning, to say the least. A couple other things I'd like to mention now as far as a comment as opposed to the questions is that the closed area, the recruitment might have a reason for a difference between the differences in the recruitment that's seen in the closed areas on Georges as opposed to those in the Mid-Atlantic. And one thought that came to my mind is that the closed areas on Georges were closed because of groundfish, as opposed to the closed areas in the Mid-Atlantic, which were closed to high abundances of small scallops. So we actually did, as Ron Smolovitz was speaking of, we were cultivating our scallops down there. The others we got lucky on. We'd said that all along during my tenure on the committee and on the council. So I think we need to look more closely at that and take an advantage of what is in there, which brings me to the point that they just got off another one of the survey trips, which I might remind the council and the audience that are funded in great part, if not totally, by the industry, both through the processing sector, the supplier sector, people such as Harry Diedrichson, the fuel companies, and the boats themselves. This is science that's coming from the industry that we're having a hard time having adopted, let alone accepted. Anyways, the information that came out of that, and it's been presented before, but it's been currently found to be true again in the trip just ended. They just got in off the trip for this year here. But 2005 very closely parallels the same findings that they found in a Nantucket lightship last year, and that was losses of large scallops, fully grown adult scallops. They figured it was a 50% loss due to mortality. You can't call it natural mortality because 50% in a given area, to me, would assume that there's a lot more than just natural mortality going on. That equates to approximately 15 million pounds, which is pretty close to some of the yield figures, maximum yield figures that we were seeing in the document. So my thought on that subject would be that there is a terrible injustice being done to management there of these scallops if we're allowing 15 million pounds to be wasted in a closed area that only yields approximately 1.2 million to our access program. Thank you very much for allowing me to make my comment.
Paul?
Not for that comment. just a little background on the council wanted to have scallops done as quickly as possible, if you recall, and the industry was pushing that. So I asked Devorah and John Borman to update the reference points, especially MSY, so the council could make two very important decisions. What is the percent allocation, and how many participants should be allowed in the general category fishery? Those were the two big reasons, and there was nothing that I could find in Amendment 10 or anywhere that gave the council the opportunity to look at what is the long-term average yield. You know, there was really nothing. So they were tasked, Devorah, the Science Center, in consultation with the PDT to give the council some information that they could determine percentages and number of participants. I think they did a great job, and our SSC did a great job, peer-reviewed it, and said, yep, it's somewhere between 40 and 70 million. A hard range for the council to determine participants and percentages, but nevertheless, that's the best available science. It's going to be incorporated because it's been peer-reviewed, and I think we've got to move on with alternatives now. Second thing, our process is that the public and industry should attend the SSC meeting and ask questions. Or we change our process and have the SSC, like all the other councils, attend our council meeting, do the work, and then report to the council. That might be another reason why all the other councils have their SSC meet. So think about how a lot of this would have been avoided if the SSC met along with our council meeting and did this type of work with us instead of in a separate meeting. Thank you.
Tom.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask for a clarification on my first question, though, please, about the YesMass data? I want to make sure I've got it right in my mind so that when I do report back on what I've heard on it, that I have it correctly. But it's my understanding, Devorah, that you said that you used it in 2003, but you haven't seen the 2004-2005 data.
Yeah, in the assessment model that we are working on for the SARC process, it incorporates any surveys that are available. And we were given the 2003 SMAS data, and we put that into the assessment model. And we would do that in 2004, 2005. We have the data. We don't have the data. And that's one thing. The second thing, I just mentioned that 50% mortality, that hasn't been reviewed by the PDT or any other group. And there's some serious issues. It was inferred by 50% drop in the survey. 50% drop in a survey does not imply 50% drop in the biomass. It might. But surveys have error to them. And you often see more fluctuation in the survey than you do in the actual abundance. And so it's a bit of an overinterpretation at this point. It might be that there's a big drop, but I don't think anyone's seen enough evidence.
And that anyone that you're referring to means the PDT hasn't seen this evidence, nor has the SSC.
They sent us a small document.
Small document.
Which didn't have, particularly didn't have any error estimates on the, on that decrease.
Alright.
And you need error estimates of how the reliability of that for any scientific information.
Yeah, so this doesn't turn confrontational on this. I'd like to speak to Devorah and whoever else can help me with these issues later on, but thank you very much.
Sorry, Tom?
I think Paul made a couple of the points I would make, but I think it's fairly clear that the SSC did as we asked them to do. And they gave us the reasonable bounds under which they perceived that we ought to be looking at the long-term biomass levels in order for us to evaluate the management mechanisms and allocation and related items that are inherent in this document and in scallop management in general. I think it's interesting that the SSC came back and basically said just about what most people in the scallop industry already knew, and that is that we're fishing at a historic high, that it's not likely to be long-term sustainable if, in fact, recruitment fades from its recent high, and that we need to be cautious in our expectations about what the fishery will provide over the long term, and that it's possible we're going to be closer to the middle or to the lower boundaries of this biomass or MSY figure than it is that we're going to be on the high end. If we're on the high end for a long time, that's wonderful, but we need to be cautious, is I think what they're saying. And I almost sounds like the criticism that we've heard is, seems to me, that no good deed goes unpunished, that they've really made an effort to try to help us to understand what the bounds are in the management for the management process, and I would encourage us to move on to that part of the discussion. That's what we're here for today. We're not here to adopt what it is that they're proposing. That is information that becomes a part of the document just as a matter of them producing it for us. Thank you.
Was that a motion?
No.
No. Okay. Once again, I'll try. Thank you. So, I think we're all set. Tom, continue with.
Okay. So I think the next step on the agenda, Mr. Chairman, is for Deidre to go through the documents that are in the binder and.